on Toussaint Movie for the music, excuse me, for the Saturday morning book interview to get you in a relaxed move. The book is called Total Power. It is a Vince Flynn book, starring, of course, Mitch Rapp, the Vince Flynn hero. And as you know, Vince Flynn died a few years ago, but the franchise has been taken over for the last few books by a great author. I really enjoy talking to him, Kyle Mills. And I did talk to Kyle about the new book. It's called Total Power, the new Vince Flynn thriller written by Kyle Mills. Always a great interview. This one is called Total Power. And there's a bunch of things to say about it, not the least of which, Kyle, how are you? It's nice to talk to you again.
Good to hear from you.
So not the least of which is the idea behind this book is that, you know, there's an end of the country, if not the world scenario here, but it's not just sort of dreamed up out of whole cloth by an author. This is something that really would be the end of the country if someone could pull it off. Why don't you explain what's involved?
All right, this actually strangely came from a book I had written years ago, the idea kind of called Darkness Falls. And I had sort of explored the idea of a terrorist group taking down the power supply. It's a very different book, and in the end, the hero stops it and all this. But I'd always wanted to explore what would happen if they'd succeeded. And what would happen if someone was actually able to take down the U.S. power grid and keep it down for a fairly long period of time? And that's what plays out in this book. I got to do a lot of really interesting research about it. And to me, it's a major threat. Our grid is pretty old. It's not very smart. It's controlled by a lot of different people. The security is kind of here and there. And while I don't think the Chinese or the Russians are going to, you know, motor their navies over and try to take over America, someone could take out our power grid, and it wouldn't be particularly difficult, and it would be incredibly devastating. Like, you don't think about it because people have been through blackouts, but, if it really did happen across the country and it happened and it stayed down for a while, I mean, you're talking about just massive casualties.
Deaths. People dying.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because all this has been explored by the government. So you really can just look at the government documents. And the government did a survey of it and decided that you could take down the entire country by knocking out like 9 substations, just 9. All these substations are pretty much unprotected. They have a chain link fence around them, most of them. And that if the power stayed out for a year, you'd have 90% of Americans would die. So whatever that would be, 300 million of us.
Well, why would such a thing be down for a year?
Well, in this case, I mean, in my scenario, it's not super difficult. If you overload the system. So the system, if you think about the power system, the way it works, it's really fascinating how this can be done. But you only supply, or the system only supplies as much power that's needed. Otherwise, you know, things would overload. So the system knows when you plug in your hairdryer and they give you a little more power, and the system, when, if not, they slough off the power and, or send it somewhere else. So if you, and there are all these fail safes for that. You know, it moves power, it shuts down power so that the grid doesn't get overloaded. And if you do overload it, and this has happened a number of times, which has caused blackouts in the past, all kinds of things can happen. You can start fires at substations. The other thing is, the hotter the lines get, the more they sag, and you can sag them into trees, which then causes fires. So, or you could physically take out, you know, 9 substations. You could do that really with a sniper rifle, really. I mean, it's not that difficult. You could, if you wanted to get fancy, you could throw some dynamite over the fence. And that would cause basically an overload through the system, which would cause many, many fires at the substations. And those substations are extremely difficult to repair because they're mostly made to order. So the transformers and stuff are made to order, and a lot of them don't even come from the United States. Some of them are so large that you couldn't even get them there anymore because the roads don't exist. They were put in like in the 50s on a special road, and the road's gone. So, and the other part of that would be starting fires all across the country, as the, you know, a lot of these substations are in wooded areas, or and when they started on fire, you would end up with enormous forest fires, many of which would be close to our major cities. So a pretty god-awful disaster scenario.
Now, as you were writing this, I mean, I'm just dealing with the basic concept right now. I got more, but as you were writing this about the sort of doomsday scenario, I think I saw in a press release or somewhere that you held back a little because you didn't really want to, you know, tell anybody how to do it.
Right.
Am I right about that?
Yeah, because I mean, I had done a huge amount of research on this. I've read books on it. I've read, you know, the government documents that have talked about it. And there is some reasonably specific information about, like, exactly how you could take out substations, which major ones you would need to take out to cause serious problems. Some substations, you know, don't really matter. They can route around it, you know, almost immediately. But if you coordinated the attack, and particularly if you coordinated it with a cyber attack, because some of the systems are pretty old and are not very well protected from cyber attacks, that kind of a coordinated attack, both physical and cyber at the same time, would be the kind that caused a lot of damage. And if you could then also cause, you know, lines to sag and cause a lot of fires to start, you know, do it in the summer when the lines are already sagging because of heat and because people are running their air conditioning, and when you couldn't stop fires if they got started, particularly if all the power was out, you know, the fire departments would be struggling. So I you know, changed things up and obscured things because, you know, obviously not my job to create a roadmap. It's more to look at the general scenario and think about that.
Now, before I leave the general scenario, do you have a sense that our government is not only aware of this, but is actually doing something about it?
They're aware of it. They're not doing anything about it. It's a tough thing to do because you've got a lot of power companies. They're all lobbying because, you know, obviously putting in more security measures would cost them money. So no, I don't think it's something that it would cost. I don't know. I think they estimated about Congress estimated about $5 billion to really secure it. But there doesn't seem to be much of an impetus. You know, the government tends to react to things that have happened as opposed to things that are going to happen. And there has been one coordinated attack on a substation. Not many people have heard about it, but somebody with a rifle took one out. They did it in a very coordinated way. Like, it was very smart. They've never caught the person that did it. And it was very terrifying because it felt like a proof of concept, like somebody had gone out there to see if it could be done, and it could be, but nothing ever came of it from a security standpoint.
Was that the one in California, the Morgan Hill?
Yeah, it was in California. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do remember that one in the news. Okay. So let me talk about, or get you to talk about, Mitch Rapp and the villain of this story. Because I noticed a couple things. I think Mitch is a little bit different in that he seems to have matured some. I would, you know, was going to say older and wiser. Before we talk about him, I really like this villain. This is a badass villain. I must compliment you on this villain. He is really interesting.
Oh, good. I'm glad you thought so. Yeah, you know, I love villains. I mean, I always have in my writing. I almost prefer them to heroes because, I don't know, maybe I'm a villain at heart, but I love, you know, people who are really smart and kind of unbounded by human empathy. And it's just, it's interesting to think what they could do if there were a lot of people like this out there. It's really horrifying to think about. So yeah, this villain is a bit of a psychotic. I mean, he doesn't have any grand plans so much as he just likes to create destruction, and he's really, really brilliant. So not an easy guy to track down. You know, I mean, they have to really pull out all the stops to find him, because every time, you know, they think they're onto him, he figures out they're onto him and can slip away. So, and it's more of a domestic terror kind of thing. I mean, I do bring ISIS into it and things, but I'm becoming more and more interested in internal threats to America versus external threats, because I think it's something that hasn't been explored as much in thriller novels, and I think it's something that's really relevant now.
Well, this particular villain also has a really nasty attitude. I mean, his thinking about, you know, the people around him, the, you know, the population in general, you know, the people he's, I'm making air quotes here, allegedly working for, et cetera. His internal monologue on these people is, I mean, I found it hysterical, but also just, you know, he's just a guy with a terrible attitude about everybody.
Yeah, well, he has just the most incredible superiority complex. And just, you know, I mean, he just thinks everybody else is a complete idiot and useless, and that he is sort of a god among men. And so, yeah, you get that internal monologue where he's talking about all the people around him and how much he despises all of them, and it just has to suffer being around them all the time, which was kind of a fun character to write, because sometimes we all feel like that, right?
Especially on Twitter, yeah. Yeah. And as for Mitch, am I right that I've detected a little bit of a change and that he's getting a little sort of wizened in this process of constantly saving the world?
Yeah, absolutely. Because to me, that was always what was so fascinating about Mitch, as Vince wrote him, is that you had this guy who, you know, we start with Mitch when he's in college, and now he's in his mid-40s. He's been through, you know, this incredible life, pretty horrifying life, really. And where that's taken him. I mean, that's why I think that's why I as a fan loved this character, is because he's always changing and growing, just like a real person. The Mitch of today is not the Mitch of American Assassin any more than I'm the same guy I was when I was in school. So yeah, I've tried to continue to evolve the character as he gets older and to take in, you know, all the experiences he's had throughout his life to, you know, continue that evolution.
Oh, do you still like writing about Mitch?
I do, yeah. And for that reason, because he continues to change. You know, I could never write a character who, you know, is always the exact same character. But as he gets older, he gets new relationships. You know, now he has a girlfriend with a young daughter, and he's trying to deal with that. And you know, all the new challenges that he has to face, and, you know, the changing world. I mean, the world is, you know, and the challenges to America are very different today than they were, say, in the late 80s when, you know, or mid 80s when he got started. So, yeah, I mean, I never get tired of him for that, because of that.
Well, in a way, you're kind of lucky that you did this when you did it, and it's coming out when it is, because you don't have to face the reality of our, you know, current situation. I mean, Mitch isn't running around in a mask. Nobody's socially distancing. I just wonder, you know, if you contemplated how you would handle fiction in you know, today's world where all of that is seemingly required?
I am not at this point thinking I'm going to deal with it. I'm keeping my fingers crossed that, it's kind of an alternate universe. I call it the rapverse, right? I mean, it's similar to what we have going on today, but not exactly the same. The characters are different, you know. I mean, Donald Trump isn't president in the rapverse, right? It's another guy and all this. So, you know, the rule in my mind is kind of if people are alive, they're kind of off limits. Like he might just think about Ronald Reagan or Nixon or something like that. But so it's a different universe. If this goes on for a long time, I mean, if I write another book, and so that would be next year, about a year from now, that would be coming out. I might have to, if this is still running rampant, I will have to deal with that. You know, I'll have to go. I wouldn't write a book that way now, but I would probably have to go back right before publication and make those changes.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty tricky when you look at the environment, the reality environment we're in, where a hero like Mitch Rapp, you know, can't be close to anybody and. And, you know, there's a lot of complications. All right. So there, you know, it's interesting. I think it's about halfway through this book, Total Power, the new Vince Flynn book by Kyle Mills, that the guy does take down the grid. And
yeah.
So I don't know how much you'd like to give away about this, but what is the world like when the power is cut off?
Well, this is kind of without creating too many spoilers. This is what I was so interested in that I had wanted to explore since I wrote Darkness Falls, and also to give Mitch a different challenge. I mean, Mitch always saves the day, and the idea behind this one is, what if he didn't? What if, you know, what if things went very, very wrong and he had to try to put them right as opposed to stopping it? And this is, I mean, and it's an unbelievable disaster. It's hard to imagine unless you really think about what would happen. I mean, just say to a person individually, the power's out. It's out all over the country. You can't pump gas. You can't refrigerate. I mean, air conditioning goes out, heating goes out, and this isn't something that's going to be here, you know, going on in one small area where other areas can help out, like Superstorm Sandy or something. This is all across the country. Your grocery store doesn't have, I mean, it gets cleaned out of food and it's not getting any more. There is no more food. Your refrigeration is down, so the food you have is rotting. The restaurants sell all their food in a day. If it's air conditioning, if it's summer, it gets unbearably hot, particularly in apartment buildings. Nobody has gas. They run out of gas on the roads. Everything's gridlocked. You can't get out of the cities. You can't drive on the roads. Hospitals don't have power. I mean, a lot of places have power temporarily, but, you know, their generators run out. Communications go down, you know, so there's no, I mean, you might have ham radio if you've got a radio that runs on batteries or a hand cranked radio, but who has that? Your cell's down, can't call anybody. It's pretty terrifying. I live in Wyoming and I think, well, and I'd get out and I'd have to go out in the snow and shoot an elk, you know, to drag it back to my house, you know, on foot. You know, the city's law enforcement would break down. You know, people would get desperate. They'd start breaking into each other's houses. They'd start killing each other for resources. Just little things like people would try to light their houses with candles or heat their houses with fires. We're not used to doing that in America, so we'd catch the cities on fire. And there's no fire trucks. The big problem you have, though, is after a relatively short period of time, the water pressure goes out. Once the water pressure goes out, nobody has water or sanitation, and then everybody dies. So, and you're talking about a couple of weeks, you know, I mean, well, some water pressure could go out in the cities, some cities even sooner than that, depending on the system they have. Some of it's gravity fed and you can get around, you know, that'd last for a little while, but then they would go out and then you got no water in your tap, you know, water in your toilet. Now you better have a clean river. Again, I'm lucky to be in Wyoming. I can walk like 50 yards from my house and get water from a river if it's not frozen. And it's drinkable, but if you live in Manhattan, you're gonna have a hard time.
Yeah. No, it's a fascinating scenario and really scary. I've been, you know, I was in New York in that last big, blackout. And the sight of literally hundreds of thousands of people walking up Sixth Avenue, you know, to try to get to a bridge, to get over to Brooklyn or, you know, or to Queens. I mean, it really was something. And you can imagine, yes, you can imagine this going on. Now, you know, there would be a few people probably in Wyoming who would have the wherewithal to survive all of that by heating with their fireplaces and going out and shooting an elk. Is that the 10% you talk about that wouldn't die?
Yeah. I mean, you'd have people probably all over that found ways to survive, but certainly much easier for me in a place that's not population dense. And there are a lot of resources here for people to survive. And it's kind of, I mean, they're Wyoming people, right? We're kind of largely used to this sort of thing. So not too difficult if you're in Wyoming, Idaho, Montana, you know, places like that. But if you're, particularly if you're in a city, then you'd become trapped in that city. You know, the roads would clog and you wouldn't be able to get out. And then you'd also have, you know, the crime problems. And then again, once the water goes out, you know, the clock is ticking. People can live for a long time without food. But without water, you know, you're talking about a few days. So, and then if the water, even if the water kept going, but it wasn't being cleaned, it wasn't being sanitized because those systems were out. Now everybody's getting sick. So, the government, you know, would try to do something, obviously, but the power's out everywhere. So the government, the military, they don't have power either. You'd have an international rescue effort, but, you know, they can only get supplies to the coast. You still got to get them inland, and there's no cars. So, yeah, like it's when you think about it, it's pretty horrifying.
So how much more do you want to say about how Mitch deals with this?
Oh, I don't want to say too much, but yeah, I mean, poor Mitch has to work in the dark without communications. I mean, the good thing for him is he's sort of like the Wyoming people, right? He has this house that he's built to be completely self-sufficient. So he has generators and his own water supply and, you know, solar panels. His girlfriend has a Tesla and he can keep charging it off his solar panels. So he can get around a little bit. And then the government, you know, retreats to their bunkers. So they're going to be okay. But it's, you can't track people. You can't, you know, you don't have the internet. You don't have phones to track people with. Even getting planes in the air is difficult. Communicating is difficult. So you have really weird scenarios where people could run. And if it's cloudy in particular, like they're really hard to track because you can't coordinate between agencies. You can't look at them from the air. You know, it's kind of like going back to Sherlock Holmes era. You know, you can't look it up on the internet.
Yeah. I don't want to give any more of it away except to say, you know, Mitch is always a fascinating character to me, but I really do love this villain. He is, he will keep you turning the pages. He's great. So I wanted to ask you about something else that I didn't know about the first time I interviewed you, which I noticed when I went to connect on Skype was 10 months ago. But I saw in a press release. So what is your family connection to the Lockerbie Pan Am crash?
Oh, well, yeah, that so I don't know if people, everybody knows, but the reason Mitch got into the CIA is when he was in college, the love of his life, his college girlfriend, died in the Lockerbie crash, in the terrorist bombing of Pan Am 103. And it's kind of coincidental, a little bit of the my connection with that is that I was actually, me and Mitch were the same age, I was having my college graduation dinner in London when that happened. And my father was the legal attaché there. He was the FBI's representative in the UK. And so his assistant came in while we were having dinner at this restaurant and said that this plane had crashed in Lockerbie. And they, you know, at the time they thought it was probably a mechanical issue, but during the dinner, it became, he stayed at dinner and it became evident that it appeared to have been a terrorist act. And yeah, my father left and I didn't see him again for months. He moved to Lockerbie to do that, to run the FBI's part of that investigation.
So, you know, just a little bit of probing. So your dad is essentially an FBI agent or a super FBI agent since he's a legal guy. So how much of his experience makes its way into your books?
Oh, a lot. I mean, this has been my whole life. My father was an FBI agent. He became an FBI agent, I don't know, like right after I was born, he went to Quantico. So this is the world I grew up in. You know, I was always surrounded by FBI, CIA, you know, spec ops guys. We lived, you know, all over from Oregon to Washington, D.C. to London. And I got to know all those people. You know, I knew the head of MI6 really well, the head of the CIA, which obviously was a fascinating way to grow up because you got to hear all these stories, these incredible stories of the things that these guys had done. And my father had this amazing career of, you know, now I think a lot of the FBI stuff is really intellectual now, but back then it was much more cowboy, particularly in Oregon where I grew up. And I mean, you know, my poor father's been thrown out of second story windows and attacked by monkeys. And I mean, it was quite a career and quite a thing to grow up with. And that's why when I wrote my first novel, I thought, what am I going to write about? And I loved thriller novels. And I thought, I'm going to write about the FBI and FBI agent because, you know, this is what I know. And I can incorporate all these characters and all these stories I've heard into these books, which I have, you know, for forever and still do.
You still got more?
Oh, yeah, you know, do more. And then, and you know, the other thing is back then, people probably don't think about this, but when I wrote my first book, there was no internet. So research was really difficult. Yeah. And I had all those friends. So, you know, if I wanted to know what, you know, I remember somebody telling me I had said something about mail being delivered in, this was a long time ago too, at the FBI building in the J. Edgar Hoover building. And they said, no, we have these robots that deliver the mail that like drive along the hallways. This is in the '80s. And I had no idea. Like, oh, okay, well I'll fix that. So it was fun to, you know, reconnect with a lot of those people and to get insight into all this and to try to make it as realistic as possible.
Well, listen, the book is fascinating. Anybody who is a Vince Flynn, Mitch Rapp fan is going to love it. And if you've never, ever read any of these books, whether they're Vince's or Kyle's, This is the one to go to because this is not only a great hero. Mitch Rapp is a great hero, but then, you know, they got this just wonderful villain who's, you know, just can't wait to see what he's going to think next. It doesn't say it a lot, but his thinking is what's fascinating. It's called Total Power. It's a new Mitch Rapp novel in the Vince Flynn series by Kyle Mills, my guest here. And Kyle, it's always great to talk to you. Very good luck with this book. And, you know, we'll be looking forward to the next one.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me.